Today is the second day of this three-day January 2023 retreat in Springwater. I would say a sunny day, which is a rare occurrence these days in this part of the world. And there's barely a cloud in the sky, which is also quite unusual this time of year. So it was really wonderful to go out for a walk this morning and just see how bright everything was at the snow. And when I was walking through the lower field, I looked to my right and I saw these two sets of eyes staring at me. I would assume a mother doe and her baby, although it was kind of a little bit more grown, but it wasn't a full-grown deer. So I assumed it was probably the offspring of the other deer. And as I was walking along the trail, they were to my right, and I looked over and they were both very intently staring at me. I just felt the impulse to call out to them and ask them how they were. And it was nice to see them. And as I walked, they didn't run off. I stopped for a few minutes and they actually didn't run off when I started to walk. And they just stared at me and I kept looking over at them. And as I walked past them, the eyes were following me. So when I started to walk, they were all staring at me one way and then their heads were completely turned the other way. The eyes just followed this moving whatever, they don't know what it is. They see this moving being and they're following it very intently all the way around. It was really remarkable just to see that intense attention that was all directed at this organism here. And this attention in those deer, this attention can also happen here in our meditation. Attention that has no center, but is looking and observing what is going on. We have a responsibility as human beings to be able to look directly at whatever comes up. And from that, I wanted to talk a little bit about conflict in relationships, because that goes on most of the time in human beings. And we talked a little bit about in the dialogue about when we notice that we're caught up, perhaps from a conversation that may have happened, some things were said, and this body-mind is stirred up. And at least here, it's noticed how that stirred upness also manifests in the body, feeling of tension, feeling of dis-ease. And most of the time, when this happens in human beings, rather than staying with it, with this kind of attention that has no center, and wonder about it, maybe there's feelings of hurt, and one could wonder, what is getting hurt here? Or maybe there's something that's triggered some anxiety and fear. And maybe we can with this open attention, wonder about what is behind this fear? What is this fear? But most of the time, we want to move away. We want to resist. And sometimes when there's hurt that we've perceived happen by another person, the first thing we want to do is to go to blame, to create stories about this other person. We want them to suffer how they made us suffer. We want them to have consequences for their behavior, and so on. And not to say right or wrong about any of this, but what is discovered here in talking about this responsibility, we have the responsibility for our own happiness, for our states of mind. And in that, when these things arise, rather than carrying it on for days and months, a feeling of hurt or anger about something, which we do, we have the responsibility to sit and look at it directly in this open attention and noticing the pattern of thought, the pattern of moving away. Because once we notice the moving away, we are right there with it. There's some seeing, easing up. And wonder, what is getting hurt? Because that's a really good question. Who is getting hurt? Looking at it here, when this has happened, it's some image, some identity, something that I'm attached to about myself that someone poked a hole in. Which is all thought, the story of oneself, also the expectation of others. Being let down because someone didn't live up to one's expectation. Letting oneself down because one doesn't live up to one's own expectations. This is all the mechanism of thinking and conditioning based on memories of what has been done to one in the past or what has been expected of one in the past. Or what is expected of others and being let down. And I've spoken in the past about the intense feelings of being let down by my mother and all the hurt and all the identity buildup around that as being a victim of a neglectful mother. And the expectation of wanting her to be the mom like everyone else, that where the child was her first priority, which it wasn't at that time, at that particular time. It was the way it was. But that hurt and that victim identity was carried on for years. And then in another time in a relationship, there was hurt by being abandoned by the partner. And again, all of the stuff of that hurt, being a victim, all of that was all playing into that. And it went on for long periods of time. until finally something here realized that all of this holding on was just living in a cocoon of suffering. And nothing on the external, trying to change things externally in one way or the other, creating some security out there, did not or could not really get at this cocoon of suffering. It wouldn't get resolved there. It had to be resolved here, which meant facing directly this attachment to an identity. And staying with whatever comes up there. Fear of who will I be when I'm not the victim, or I'm not this or that. Fear of being nothing. Nothing at all. And going into that, wondering about it. Finding out what a relief it is to be nothing at all. Nothing to hold up. But this comes out of attention. Something has been triggered in oneself, or noticed, or whatever, that the only way is through. There's no way around it. So in relationships where conflict arises, first we need to take responsibility for the suffering that is here. And wonder about it. Watch how the mind wants to move into blame, accusations, all of that stuff. And truly, does that really alleviate the initial hurt? And this is not to say that one needs to have a conversation with someone where the interaction created conflict. But until one has resolved it in oneself, how much change or shift can happen in our conversation with another person? Because when we're coming from me who was hurt, the me is, you did this to me, kind of energy. How much would the other person be able to hear? How much communication will come out of that, or connection? Can we be honest with how we are, how we're feeling? And speak to the other person, not in blame, but in sharing, without any expectation, without any agenda of what the other person to think and feel. something that came up recently during, actually it was Christmas, around Christmas. And I have a 92-year-old mother who's taking care of her husband who has Parkinson's and he's 75. And my brother always comes for the holidays. And my mother was really looking forward to him coming. And my brother is on the spectrum. He's got Asperger's. He's not necessarily, well, he's easy in some ways to be with, but my husband has a lot of issues around him. For one thing, he's very smelly. Put it that way. He smells, and he lives in this cabin in the woods, and you know, he doesn't have running water, but he does bathe once a week or something. But he's just, you know, I don't know how he washes his clothes by hand, but nothing ever gets really clean. And he really smells. And it drives my husband nuts. And he stays with us because he can't stay with my mom because they don't have space for him. So every year I'm in this state where I have a husband who doesn't really want him there and a mother who really needs to see him. And I'm the only one in the family that is willing to take him in, basically. So he used to come for like 2 weeks, would just be like too much. So I thought I'd compromise and just say he could come for a week. And I was talking with my mom and I was expressing to her just, I don't know, I think in that moment I was probably just feeling very stressed and just, I just wasn't really in a peaceful mind state. And I just kind of said, why am I the only one that has to take him in? It's like, you know, complaining or whatever. And I know that it was probably hurtful for my mom when I said that. And she, you know, I don't think she said anything to me, but I know that it was hurtful. And I felt really bad that I had lost my ability to not let that stuff come out that I was feeling. The holidays came and I told my brother that he can, you know, I told my mom that I had emailed my brother and said he could come, you know, during these dates. I think it was like the 23rd to like after New Year's. And so I made arrangements and everything was okay and so on. But then we had this huge sort of winter storm scenario and in Buffalo, and also very cold, and Amtrak decided to cancel the train, you know, for that day. And then my brother tried to book the next day, and then that was canceled. And my brother will only travel by train, so there was no way he could get here by Christmas or even after. It was like for several days. Probably almost that whole week, I don't even think you could take a train. So it worked out that he just couldn't come. And my mom had been looking forward to it, and she had gotten this turkey that she was gonna cook, and my sister was gonna help put it in the oven and so on. But that was already bought and all of that. So I went over there Christmas morning to give some presents, and my sister was there, and she was putting the turkey in the oven. And I usually go to my husband's family for Christmas day or evening. And every year it's always been that way. We have thanks, you know, whatever. So my mom, which was really unusual for her, but three or four times she said to me, how come you always go to Chris's family for Christmas? How come they don't invite me? Can't they even think about your family? And she said that like three times. And at first I kind of was like, well, that's how it's always been. And, you know, whatever. But then I didn't really say much. And then when I got out of the apartment, in the car, I just felt this overwhelming sense of sadness, because I realized that it wasn't really that I was at my going to Chris's family, but it was the fact that my brother wasn't there. And she had no one except, you know, she was making this turkey and she was going to make it for him and he wasn't there. So that whole, most of that day, I just was, you know, I was there and I was being with stuff, but I was just feeling this just sadness about my mom and the turkey and all that. She was going to have all that work to put it away and cooking it and, you know. And, but that was what was there. And even though that was sort of going on and observing some of the thoughts and being at this, but at the same time, I was at this with Chris's family and it didn't really interfere with being with them as well. It was sort of on the undercurrent. And I think by the end, I actually was expressing some of my sadness while I was there. And so that's what life is. Things go on, things get triggered. And sometimes there's sadness. It's just what's there. And there's no, you can't really control how things are going to turn out or to prevent anything. Sometimes we just have to feel what's here, whether thoughts have triggered it or a circumstance triggering thoughts. And sadness doesn't necessarily mean feeling sorry for oneself. Things sometimes are just sad. And that's okay. But the point is that whatever is here, watch how we want to move away and try to change something, want to make it better, want to strategize. Always moving away, closing up. For what? Pain is unavoidable. It's part of being in a body, in this organism, physical pain, and the mental pain that perhaps we create most of it. But there's loss. We don't create loss. We don't create someone losing someone. It happens. And as sensitive beings, it's sad. We can add more to it by denying the sadness or adding to it by, why me? Why did this person have to leave me? Or thinking of memories and wanting the person to come back. That can sort of add more to the sadness. But the fact that someone is no longer here in itself is sad. Just is. And that needs to be felt directly. With all that's there, I felt in losing someone the sadness, but at the same time also feeling love, feeling connected to this being, this sensitive human being, the structure of all of it, and compassion. Compassion for all the loss in the world, not just here, one's own loss, but all loss. In attending openly to what is here with no center, that is getting in touch with this intelligence, this awareness that is not dependent of thought or come about from thought. It's just here. It's the thinking that's clouding it over. And that, as I said, is available when there's curiosity, when there's interest, when there's courage to face directly what is in front of one. The truth of how things are. And when this shift from being caught up in an image or thoughts, this shift of being here, of being whole and complete, seeing the whole and completeness, the dropping of the baggage, that shift that happens here happens everywhere. It has a profound effect on how we interact. Even if we get caught up and have a negative interaction, it's possible to see that directly, make amends with oneself, the other person. That's the only real fundamental change is right here. Human beings spend all kinds of energy changing government systems, different belief systems, trying to make things better for one group of people versus another group of people, all these external things. But profound change happens right here in the individual. Because when that inner individual is whole, is with the wholeness, has some space that affects the people that they are with, but who they communicate with, that energy of connectedness is felt. It's felt here, but it also could be felt in the other person. It can make a difference. And is it possible to live a life that is not adding to suffering in the world? and to see how one creates suffering, how one is. And in this suffering, how we expand the suffering onto others. And it goes on and on and on. We have wars. We have all kinds of violence. So that is the vitality of this meditative inquiry. It's no small task. It's active and can be arduous in this looking, in this staying with, and watching the movements of resistance, of covering up, of moving away. And also watch the movement to grasp, to want, to hold on, and the defensiveness. As neither good nor bad. Because good nor bad is just another form of defense. It's adding a layer to what is directly here, the truth of it. And in this open tension, there is energy. The energy flows. And from there, that love and compassion arise without any doer, wanting, loftiness, none of that. And joy. Joy of being alive in this beautiful world with the blue sky right now with hardly a cloud in it and the glistening snow. And those deer that one saw looking at one, it's such a marvel to behold. It's living a life that is full of aliveness, just like all the life around us that we barely notice when we're caught up, but is here. And don't take my word for any of this. This is something each one of you, including myself, needs to find out for oneself the truth of that and what is true. Not because somebody else said so, because one has seen it directly in oneself and in the world and all of that. Krishnamurti said, "You are the world and the world is you." And I will end the talk here.